It's Thursday, the 5th of September, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, chaos and confusion in Westminster as Boris Johnson vows to fight on.
But Mr. Speaker, I know he's worried about free trade deals with America, but there's only one chlorinated chicken that I can see in this house, and he's on that bench.
Monocle's Paul Osborne will bring us the very latest on another big day in politics. Plus, Hong Kong's leader says she'll withdraw the controversial extradition bill that sparked the city's ongoing protests. But is it too little, too late? We'll visit an unexpected architectural event in the state of New York, and our fashion editor Jamie Waters delivers a cautionary tale on the peril of expanding a business too quickly. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Britain's week of political chaos is continuing after another extraordinary day in Westminster yesterday. Monocle's Paul Osborne has been following events. Paul, what have we seen over the past few hours?
In short, even more chaos than in the previous day. Boris Johnson, 6 weeks into his time as Prime Minister, has effectively now lost control of the House of Commons. He has been defeated in every vote he has faced so far, with MPs now voting to force him to block a no-deal Brexit at the end of October. And 2 hours after that, Mr. Johnson's call for a general election in October also failed. From the front benches, it was the same as before. Johnson daring Labour to an election, and Labour's Jeremy Corbyn saying first, rule out no deal.
I repeat what I said last night. Let this bill pass and gain royal assent. Then we will back an election so we do not crash out with a no deal exit from the European Union.
I think he has become the first, to my knowledge, the first leader of the opposition in the democratic history of our country to refuse the invitation to an election, Mr. Speaker. I can only speculate as to the reasons behind his hesitation.
Yesterday's votes weren't really a surprise, though. After 21 Conservative MPs were thrown out of their party on Tuesday for voting against Johnson, they were hardly going to change their minds the next day. One of those expelled, Kenneth Clark, appealed to Boris Johnson to think again.
I urge him one last time to stop treating all this as a game and to use the time to actually get a serious resolution of these impossible problems.
And Alistair Burt, another now former Conservative, had this warning for his critics.
I say to my colleagues, if we are being purged now, who's next?
Yeah!
Who's next?
And then there was Labour MP Jess Phillips, one of the stars of the back benches. She had a few choice words for the, frankly, very many Conservative MPs who are uneasy at what their party is becoming, but who so far have remained silent.
It is an abomination the way your party has behaved.
Absolutely.
You've all crowed and given sympathy to me about the problems that we have in the Labour Party, and you've just sat by silently while your colleagues have been marched out.
Perhaps what this day did do is demonstrate that Britain's Parliament, maligned for so long by so many, still has something going for it. The Prime Minister is not a president with absolute power. Boris Johnson has chanced his arm this last week, and he's overreached, and the Commons has taken back control. And right now, Johnson really is a lame duck. Now, it doesn't mean it's all over. Perhaps the most likely route is for Boris Johnson to consent to the rebel bill designed to rule out no deal. Jeremy Corbyn has said Labour would in that case agree to an election, but others in Labour want to wait until the October the 19th deadline is triggered. That would oblige Boris Johnson to seek an extension. It would rule out an election too before mid-November and would keep the UK inside the EU, certainly until the beginning of next year. To be honest though, anyone who claims to know what's going to happen next is lying, including, quite frankly, the Prime Minister.
Well, it's sure to be another big day in British politics. Paul Osborne, always good to get your insights. We'll no doubt be hearing more from you over the days and weeks ahead. Thanks for joining us. Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, says she'll withdraw the controversial extradition bill that sparked the ongoing protests. Analysts have noted that the demonstrations appear to have moved well beyond the bill, however, into a wider demand for democracy. Recent days have also seen suggestions that the Hong Kong government may invoke a colonial-era law in a bid to quell the protests. Isabel Hilton, editor of China Dialogue, explains.
It's the Emergency Regulations Ordinance. It gives very draconian powers to the Hong Kong authorities, and it was introduced in 1926, actually, as a result of a general strike in Hong Kong, which was in response to an episode in Shanghai in which forces under British command in the international settlement in Shanghai had shot and killed a number of Chinese protesters. So, you know, again, in Hong Kong, you had this echo of what was happening in China, in other, you know, colonial settlements in China. The next time it was used was in the Cultural Revolution when there was more disturbance in Hong Kong. And the last general strike in Hong Kong was, in fact, after Tiananmen, and it was in protest against the Chinese authorities. So that's, you know, in part the evolution of the status of Hong Kong vis-a-vis Chinese politics. Clearly, it's tempting for the authorities to invoke a law that is a legacy of the imperial and colonial past. It's also embarrassing. After all, Beijing has, you know, made a whole point of the liberation of Hong Kong from the yoke of British rule. So pretty embarrassing explicitly to invoke this. But I don't think that Beijing has many good options in this situation. And the longer it goes on, the fewer options there are. And one of the things that I think Beijing has to consider, and one of the reasons that we have seen relative restraint so far, is the question of how severe a crackdown would have to be to work. Because so far, all the severity of the police action against the protesters has simply created a stronger reaction on the streets. So how bad would it have to be before Beijing would get the peace that Beijing undoubtedly wants?
Now to the state of New York, which is playing host to a, well, somewhat unexpected architectural event. Monocle's Nick Manise has more. Nick, the city of Buffalo doesn't immediately spring to mind when we talk about modernism.
No, I think, Ben, when you're thinking about great architectural cities or towns in the United States, you know, you might think of Chicago or Palm Springs in California. But Buffalo is actually sort of a little-known treasure in the design world for modernist architecture. They've got works by, I'm going to try and get this right, Max Abramovitz, who, you know, famously designed the United Nations headquarters in New York. He's got quite a famous temple there, Temple Beth Zion. And Louis Sullivan, actually, the founding father of modernist architecture in the United States, has got some quite significant work there too.
Quite a sleeping giant, I suppose, in the architectural world. Where did this event come from then? Who's actually behind it?
So Preservation Buffalo Niagara is behind it. They're basically a community-run organisation that was established in 2008 to try and more or less preserve the great architectural history and I guess general history in the Buffalo region and Erie County. And they've put together basically a week-long event with talks and tours. There's a 14-stop self-guided driving tour, which I quite like the sound of. It sounds like a great opportunity to get a headscarf on and fire up that vintage Chevy and sort of drive around Western New York.
You paint quite an image, Nick.
I don't know. I just quite like that. Yeah, I guess it's a great way to maybe expose that community and remind them of how much of a precious design legacy they have in this region.
Nick Manise, always a pleasure. Thank you. Finally today, Monocle's fashion editor Jamie Waters considers the perils of growing your fashion brand too quickly.
A cautionary tale unfolded this week in Helsinki concerning the Finnish fashion brand Samuji. Founded a decade ago by Samu Jussi Koski, Samuji amassed a cult following for its clean womenswear silhouettes and punchy prints. At its peak in 2017, it managed 2.2 million euros in annual sales and had stockists from Tokyo to LA. A flagship store in New York followed. Yet, like so many independent brands, the cash flow dried up. International expansion is a risky thing. And last week, Samuji issued a heartfelt call on its website and social media feeds, asking the public to save it from bankruptcy. The brand wrote on a Finnish crowdfunding site that, quote, "As we sometimes do in life when trying to grow a business, we misjudge some of the risks and find ourselves in an economic situation that challenges our business. The company was aiming to raise 400,000 euros, although 150,000 would save it from immediate bankruptcy. Yesterday, it revealed that it ended up with just over 200,000 euros. For now, it looks like Samuji will live to fight another day. But the incident is a sobering example of the volatility of running an independent brand, the danger of overexpanding, and about the need for a watertight business plan. The fashion industry celebrates beautiful things, but many of the small brands propping it up survive because they are canny with money and are hustling, always hustling, to get their designs in front of customers. Samuji's raw, emotional plea reminds us of the perils of being an entrepreneur. There's a lesson here for all of us.
Monocle's fashion editor, Jamie Waters. For more stories like that one, keep an eye out for our special autumn fashion edition of the latest Monocle newspaper, out on all good newsstands now. That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Friday.